How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Are the kids all right? A study from local nonprofit A Better Chicago might have the answer. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. More than 5 years on from the start of COVID-19, the organization A Better Chicago's State of Our Youth report reveals how poverty, mental health, and community violence continue to impact young people in our area, and how the pandemic made existing challenges worse. To dig into what we need to know, we spoke with Beth Swanson, CEO of A Better Chicago. We also had artist and poet Diana Gomez on the program. Outside of her art, she works for nonprofits around the city and was ambassador for Young Chicago Authors. Diana began with what she sees as the biggest challenges facing young people today.
I think one of the biggest things right now, we're in such an age where we have so much information available to us, like all the time we're being bombarded by information here and there. And it's so hard to keep a track, first of all, of what we should actually be paying attention to, what actually is real. You know, there's really no regulation for everything we're receiving. And especially, like, I feel like younger people, they still haven't even had a chance to make up their minds or have an opinion, and they're already being told what to think. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that is one of the biggest things. And like regarding all this, just as far as school, it doesn't really utilize the information we have and the resources we have to guide us in any way. So I would say that's one of the biggest ones.
So Beth, why don't we dig into the numbers? What did the numbers tell us? Give us the big picture here from your report.
Sure. Well, I'm happy to share. We have sort of seven, you know, data insights from this trends, and just a bit of background. So A Better Chicago is the city's only venture philanthropy, and we focus on alleviating poverty through providing more access and opportunity for young people in Chicago. And we built out this data tool almost 2 years ago now, and launched a data tool that really helps track all of those indicators, all that information. And quite frankly, what was interesting to hear is that we wanted to be a fact base. We wanted it to be the truth. We wanted people to have a resource who are supporting young children and through cradle to career across the city. So when we looked at those trends, we really saw seven sort of big insights. One is around poverty, that one in four Chicago youth under the age of 18 live in poverty. Mm. That figure goes to 43.5% and 0 to 5 when we look at the age range of 0 to 5.
Our youngest children are facing children. Poverty at the highest rate.
Yes.
Wow.
And some communities can be upwards at 90%. So, and again, we want to just amplify that data and have a conversation around it. The other is 94% of youth surveyed in our surveys that we do annually cite mental health as a problem experienced by people their age. You know, I feel like we all know mental health's been an issue over the last handful of years for ourselves, our children, our families. And what we're hearing across the city is that is indeed the same for Chicago's youth. Community violence was another issue we learned a lot about. It's obviously all too familiar part of life in Chicago, but nearly two-thirds of youth witnessing violence in some form, according to our citywide survey, and nearly 25%, so one in four youth are witnessing violence weekly.
Yeah. And as you alluded to, COVID-19 exposed a lot of the challenges that young people face here in Chicago. Tell us more about how the pandemic just seemed to exacerbate things.
Yeah, it truly disrupted learning. So what we see in the education space is, I think, particularly alarming. So the mental health obviously was related to the pandemic as well. But in the education space, we are seeing now that 41% of CPS students, Chicago Public Schools students, were chronically absent. So what that means is, you know, they're missing at minimum 4 weeks a year of school. Mm. So over 40% of our population is missing about a month of school. And we know that's where the most academic progress and supports are happening in the city, which is related is that we're seeing third grade reading and both third and eighth grade math proficiency rates remaining below pre-pandemic levels. So we're also seeing there's no rebound.
We're not really getting
happening.
Better there.
Are still at these pre-pandemic levels. There is a bright spot in eighth grade reading proficiency, which is rising, but we are still really struggling. But it's interesting to see, like, when if students aren't coming to school and engaging, then that has to be part of the underlying issue. And you look at chronic absenteeism, and mental health is part of those reasons. Transportation was also cited as a reason.
It's a terrible cycle.
Yeah. And so what we're trying to say at A Better Chicago is this is so interrelated. We all need to understand how these interplay with one another, how they interact. And it needs to be more than one organization working on the issue. It's much too large and complex.
Oh, for sure. You were, in high school during the pandemic, Diana?
Yeah, I was finishing up my freshman year of high school.
Wow. What was that like?
Definitely an experience. Like I was telling a friend earlier, I did midterms once throughout high school and standardized testing since we were online for part of it and stuff like that. It all kind of went out. Like high school just kind of felt like 1 year like mushed together and then
oh my goodness.
I graduated. So it was definitely like a weird transition going from being this like little freshman to automatically going to being like a junior, and I had to worry about like SATs in college, and I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
All of a sudden you're a young adult.
Yeah.
Right?
It was definitely like, I feel a little robbed from that experience. And I do know a lot of my classmates feel the same way in the way that they didn't get the full experience. Like COVID, when it happened, the online schooling, it definitely did not work at all. Yeah. You know, most students I know were just absent the whole entire year, or like even if they were in class, like they were just turning off their camera and not even being there. Yeah. They weren't present. So there was really no, it was just a year or two lost pretty much.
Yeah, I was looking at you when Beth brought up the mental health concerns, because when I look at you, I think of my own daughters who are similar age to you. And I remember that being such a big concern in our home for the first time. It was our first time sort of dealing with mental health challenges with the teenagers in my home. So how did you feel at that time, Diana? Were there resources available to you?
I think 100%. I have had my struggles with mental health, and I think the pandemic definitely amplified that. And I saw it even with like my younger sibling. She was in elementary school at the time. And I do think I'm grateful because my parents were very present in that moment, and they made sure that we were getting the help we needed. Since everyone being isolated as a kid is already like very hard. Half of our life is literally just our social life. When you're a child, you know, you don't have a job to worry about. You don't have anything else to worry about.
Bills to pay.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think that it was a really big part, but I do know a lot of people who are going through the same situation who unfortunately did not have that support at home. And sometimes school was their only outlet, and having forced to be home all the time, it definitely took a huge toll. I do think that there were a lot of more resources when we went back to school. I saw that, for example, my school like multiplied the number of counselors we had and certain things, but it was definitely something that they really couldn't regulate to the level it actually was.
Yeah, and I remember them implementing, at CPS at least, 5 or so mental health days that students could take throughout the school year. And boy, did we use those.
Yeah.
You recently wrote an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune, Beth, and you, among this, the details of this report, you were talking about disparities and structural inequalities impacting youth in Chicago. What else can you share of how this is disproportionately impacting students of color?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. I just have to stick for a minute on the mental health supports, because not only the school resources are important, obviously critical, but what we found in the data is that more and more young people turn to community-based entities and a lot of the different types of organizations we fund, and they feel like those additional resources embedded in their own community with various nonprofit leaders, mental health support programs. Mm-hmm. We're seeing just more and more uptake, and they're extremely, I feel like, comfortable going to those and feeling, you know, it's a little less structured, you know, in this than the school building is. So right. We just thought that was an interesting finding as well. But yes, you know, unfortunately, we see the particularly in the academic outcomes, particularly Black males are behind in, you know, across the board of the academic
graduation,
outcomes.
College readiness,
correct,
right?
Yes, and so same with the when we looking at violence and the exposure to violence, that 1 in 4, it's even greater for certain populations, Latina young women, and as well as, again, Black males. Yeah. And so, you know, that's something we're thinking a lot about is how can we think about as, you know, do our part as an organization that's funding nonprofits and community-based organizations to really respond to specific populations of young people who are also, you know, most vulnerable or most impacted by some of these issues.
You know, thinking back to your time in high school, Diana, what would you say then was most helpful for your success? You talked about some of those supports that were implemented in school when it comes to mental health, for instance. But just overall, what kept you coming to class? Why were you not part of the chronic absenteeism and all of the other things that were revealed in the report?
100%. To be 100% honest, I was very absent, like, my last year.
Okay, I made an assumption.
No.
Thank you for correcting me on
good.
That.
I think it was that, but I think it got better once I started working with Young Chicago Authors. I was in my junior year of high school when I started doing these competitions with them, and I needed to be at school to actually participate in the club. So I think that's what kept me going, mm-hmm. just finding, like, a community within my school and, like, outside of it as well, because I definitely did not know what I wanted to do, like, for college and all that. So finding a community that was doing a job that I didn't even know existed was definitely what kept me going. And just finding these places and safe spaces around the city.
Yeah. Who's got the power, Beth, you think, to really make a difference here for our youth? Like, and for their future, whose responsibility is it to make sure that they're good?
Yeah, I mean, I truly think it's on all of us. I mean, we public institutions, obviously, you know, you think of all the different Chicago public schools, city colleges of Chicago, Park District, the libraries, the, you know, all the places youth are in and out of. But we also think about all those community-based nonprofits, which you just mentioned. Again, that's where we see the, you know, even actually our rates of optimism we also surveyed with young people. And those that are more engaged in community-based programming are more optimistic about their futures going on to four-year school. There is a secret sauce there, as you've just talked about. And so, you know, I think it truly is, it's cross-industry, you know. And I think the problem is complex and it's large. It's the scale of Chicago. And that we need all those different actors that support young people to lean in. And what we hope from the data is to, you know, provide a resource that can help, again, put a fact base there, start to have these conversations, let organizations understand what neighborhoods do they want to scale next to, you know, what programs do we need to bring to certain communities, you know, and I think that's our hope, is to play that role just beyond our investments, because they will go so far, but they won't reach the scale that
we all
need to.
Oh, for sure. You want people to read this and take some kind of action if they're so inclined,
exactly.
Right? So there's some good news here then, Beth, right? At the end of the report, it's not all doom and gloom about how our young people are doing.
Yeah, they seem
to be pretty optimistic.
They are. And that's what was incredible, the resilience of our young people in Chicago. And just to think, right, you were struggling going to school, engaging in school. Yeah. You found a resource to help you re-engage and sort of, you know, light the spark again. And that's what we see is 95% of the respondents were optimistic about their futures. And again, likely to go to, you know, continue with their education, want to graduate from four-year college. So all of that to me is just a huge shot in the arm of optimism and validates the work we're doing. And, you know, to be able to help young people on that path, you know, is why we exist.
Yeah. Well, I had the great privilege of watching you perform recently one of your poems. Diana, I would love to hear one now for us,
no,
if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah, so this piece is called Las Quincenas de Enero, and I love to say that, I'm sorry to my Spanish impaired friends out there, it's in Spanglish. It was recently in the Chicago Reader's Poetry Corner.
Nice.
So Las Quincenas de Enero. On the other side, it's cold. And not only Chicago winters, the Christmas without the alolis, no michotes, ni tamales. Everything's frozen here, a watered-down version. But we make the best of it, find the few, turn them to many, rebuild until we can call it a family again. Todavía nos chingamos, working from Nochebuena till 6 de Enero, para seguir mandando dinero. But in February, Tata and I will sing las mañanitas. My dad never forgets the flowers para la Virgencita. From March till May, we don't speak. Let las chingas of work season set in. Make a home in my father's calluses, dreaming of a pictured palaces in countries I haven't seen in ages. To defrost las carnes asadas after spring, backyard luxury with a little mezcal. Mojarras y costillas will be fancy steaks any day of the year. Cotorreando till there are tears in our beer. Fall will come and the election year is near. Set up an altar and pray once a year. Count the overtime and hope that we will once again see las quincenas de enero.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
You do such powerful work. I'm such a fan. What do you think gives you hope when you look toward your future?
I think, as like you were speaking earlier, just the communities I'm in, the people around me and that I'm getting to know, seeing all that optimism. And like even when I do hear like stories of their past or we talk about their experiences in high school and people of my age, all of them, and I can say everyone around me, is setting goals and they're really looking forward to being able to change their situation they're in. Mm-hmm. So I think definitely just my community gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah. You are the future, right? And Beth, your hopes for the future, not just for our young people, but for us all.
Yeah. I mean, very similar. We see this hope and optimism, and just to be able to support and fuel it is really what A Better Chicago is trying to do, and so many other nonprofits in the space. And for us to be able to be a part of that story, to have a city where our youth can thrive in education, career, and life, that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Mayor Johnson's office just sent out, just as we were getting ready to have this conversation, sent out its youth impact report. It's looking at the city's efforts to engage with Chicago's young people. It's touting successes in like youth employment specifically. So I'm curious, Beth, if there is more that you think maybe the city can be doing here collectively, or is it implementing the right strategies and it just maybe needs more time for the fruit to bear? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we need more resources, period. And I know it's hard.
Yeah.
I know that's challenging right now at all levels of government. But there needs to be more resources invested in the next generation of Chicago. So I think, I haven't seen the document.
Oh, it's hot off the press.
Hot off the presses. I have not seen it yet. But we'll certainly dig in after this. But youth employment is one of those metrics we also track. We could be doing a lot more there collectively as a city. And also it's a topic that we hear directly from young people in the surveys, that they want more skill building, and they're not necessarily finding it in school.
Yeah.
Where they do find it is these community-based organizations and nonprofits.
Absolutely.
And that's what they want more of. They want sort of that real life skill, like you said, like you didn't even know this was a pathway.
Yeah.
Or a job opportunity and something she loves to do.
Exactly.
The poetry, and it's like more exposure and understanding of what's out there, and helping young people onto a path to a job and to a family sustaining wage ultimately.
Yeah, in my household, we've been very, very deliberate about, like, you know, setting them up with internships and apprenticeships with local nonprofits and just other organizations that took the time to pour into them and teach them skills at 15 and 16 and 17.
Yes.
They're just not getting elsewhere. So more of that, please.
More of that. Those are the skills.
More of that. We'll leave it there. That's Beth Swanson, who's CEO of A Better Chicago, and Diana Gomez, who's an artist and poet. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ellie Gilbert Bear. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you conversations to keep you in the know about what's happening all over Chicago. Hit subscribe to stay up to date wherever you listen, or visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for tuning in.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.